What would you put in your backpack if you had a new coaching engagement but could only take a limited number of items? Each episode, the Coach's Backpack looks at the multifaceted world of coaching and asks a new guest to tell us what they would take with them and why. Hi, I'm David Lowe, and this week we're taking a peek inside the backpack of Andy Bird, Leadership Coach. Welcome, Andy.
Hi there, David. Great to be here. Great to talk to you.
So, Andy, how would you describe what you do in under 20 words?
In a nutshell, I provide support, inspiration, and guidance to help people flourish and succeed as leaders.
Thank you very much. I think that was 17 and a half words. So yeah. I think you were under. That was okay. Yeah. Okay, right. Well, let's crack on with this. We'll find out more about Andy Bird as we go through this. So here's the concept. You've been asked to coach a new client, but you're limited to what you can take with you. So you've got your essentials, you've got your clothes and your toothbrush. And in addition to those, you can take one book, a tool, technique, concept, method, approach, etc. One other item of your choice, plus a person from the past or the present to accompany you. You can go in any order you wish, Andy, but what I would like to know is what would you take with you and why?
If I think initially about the book, I was lucky enough many years ago to work with a fantastic leadership coach myself called Steve Radcliffe. He inspired me greatly as a leader back in the day when I was running my own business, but so much that he actually inspired me to become a coach in the end. And he wrote a wonderful book, really straightforward book called Leadership Plain and Simple, and made a big impact on me, that book. And I would take that with me because I would always be drawing on that and suggesting it to some of the people I work with, because it just boils down what potentially is a really overcomplicated subject like leadership into some really simple ideas.
Okay, so Leadership Plain and Simple by Steve Radcliffe. Now, people are obviously rushing off to buy this book now on your recommendation. But just to encourage them a little bit more, if you were going to pick a snippet out of it or you were going to summarize it, what would you say about the book?
At the heart of it is an idea about what leadership's all about. And there's so much written about it. It's so complex in many ways, the way people describe it. But really, when you think about leadership, there are three elements to it. And Steve puts this across brilliantly. The first is a leader thinks about the future. And they have some sense of what they want to create or change in the future. And they start from that place. They then, secondly, engage other people in moving towards that future and helping to create that future. And then thirdly, they just deliver it. They make sure it happens. They actually deliver the results in the end in practice. And he just distills this essence of leadership into this concept of future, engage, and deliver. And everything else falls from that. I think that's a really neat way of thinking about what it means to lead other people. So often people get confused by whether they're a leader or they could be a good leader. But when you think about it like that, I think anybody can do that. It's just about building up the confidence and some of the skills involved to do it well.
Okay, so the third point there is that they do it. Is there a suggestion that they're involved rather than standoff?
Great question. Yeah, no. So as you begin to lead and have to deliver through others, then, you know, it's much less about being an operator oneself, actually doing some of the work. It's about creating the environment, building the capability in others, making sure there's some sort of accountability and follow through on things. And that's one of the challenges of leadership, is to move away from doing everything yourself to actually try and foster the environment in which other people can have that responsibility.
And maybe spoiling what's to come in a moment. What's the thing that you see the most when you're leadership coaching that Steve talks about in his book?
I think we've begun to get into it just there, actually. When you begin in your career, you start like as an operator doing stuff. You know, you have lots of lists of tasks and you get good at that, at doing those things, and you get promoted to being a manager and you begin to oversee some of that and handle some of the trade-offs, the complexity and so on, and a bit of people management involved in there. But when you move into being a leader, there's a bit of a bigger step change, and lots of people move into leadership roles without actually moving away from being an operator and a manager, because they probably quite enjoy some of that stuff. They're probably quite good at it, and they worry about letting it go in case things don't get done well. And to take that step and let go of some of it and begin to work in a way that's different, in a different kind of mode, that I think is the biggest challenge. And that requires people to really think about what leading means. And it's not just about getting stuff done. It's about, again, moving into the future, thinking more strategically, thinking about purpose and, you know, the direction you're trying to head in. And there's a huge part, probably the biggest part, is about this engagement piece, creating the relationships, the clarity of roles and responsibilities, building energy in the team. All of these things we don't often think about consciously, but that's the job of leadership. And we need to spend our time doing that rather than just worrying about crossing the I's and, well, you don't cross I's and dot T's, do you? It's the other way around.
If you cross I's, you do.
So, yeah. Dotting the I's and crossing the T's. Just as I haven't done that for a while, as you can tell.
There's one thing you said there that is a bugbear of mine, and I don't know if it's a bugbear of yours. People who are good at their job becoming managers. It's like that star footballer that they say, tell you what, you scored the most goals, let's make you the manager of the team. And if you're a player manager, then okay, right? You can still do the score the goals, but often people get promoted and then stop doing the work.
Yeah.
And they've not got the skills for leadership, right? Yeah. They've just got the skills for doing the job.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. And they may not enjoy it. I mean, what it's interesting, you know, we're tending to talk a bit about the business environment, where I think it's absolutely true what you say. But if you think of some spheres, like, you know, teaching, being a teacher, suddenly to move into a headmaster or headmistress is a massive change. Or being a journalist, becoming an editor, it's a completely different job. And the system often assumes you just want to make that progress. Whereas if you really love the work you do, you won't necessarily love being a leader. And as you point out, you won't necessarily have the skills either. I think people can build those skills and develop those skills. Steve talks about them being muscles, you know, having leadership muscles. You have to practice and get better at it. And you can do that. But what matters probably more is that you've got to enjoy it. You've got to want to be a leader. You've got to want to do some of those things. And there are things that I think can be really exciting about being a leader, which are different, you know, being more influential, having the buzz of those connections with lots of people. And many people do enjoy those things. But, you know, as you begin to take them on, you do have to let some stuff go that you probably also used to quite enjoy. And that's not always easy.
Which is why they need a leadership coach.
Indeed. Where would I be if there weren't problems?
And we must move on to the next question, but you can still pay someone more than the leader, is my view. If someone is a star player, right, yeah, they can earn, they don't have to be promoted to a manager or a leader in order to earn more. That just seems madness.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are definitely examples I've got of that. My old, back in my, early in my career, I had 15 years or so working in marketing. And then beyond that, another 15, 20 years supporting people in marketing and capability building. And in that world, you know, the role of creatives, for example, you know, you can have brilliant guys who are never going to run a big department, just brilliant ideas, and they're priceless. You know, it's just a different role, and value is created in different ways by different people. And we must remember that.
Right, I feel I'm going to draw a line on your book. So thank you. You've got that book safely in your backpack. So great. Steve's book is coming along. What else are you going to put in your backpack?
So one of the items you talked about, this isn't an item. This is a kind of mindset, state of mind or quality. And it's compassion. One of the things that strikes me in the role I have is that most people in leadership roles these days are under an enormous amount of pressure. It's really difficult. I mean, it's always been difficult. I think particularly in the environment we've been through and are currently going through with COVID and the cost of living crisis and all the stuff that's come with that, the challenges facing people who are in roles are often quite lonely because they're often, you know, responsible for big teams of people. And they can't necessarily talk openly to them. They have to shoulder all that stuff themselves. So as a coach, you really have to show up in a way that creates a space for people they can be really open and honest and share some of the stuff they're grappling with in a very transparent way, very at times show a lot of vulnerability. And I think as a coach, there is definitely a space for challenge of people. You need to challenge them to help them get the best out of themselves. but there's a lot of support too. And I think the support comes first. And just being aware of what they're going through and showing them kindness, compassion, and a real value for them as a person, I think that's pretty essential founding stone for the whole thing.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm not sure whether you're putting that under the tool, technique, concept, method, approach, or the other item of your choice, but
the other item. The other
okay.
item.
Okay. I'm going to be fine with that. So, okay. Compassion. What else?
So then I come to a tool. I have, this is a tricky one for me. I've got three tools or frameworks I use all the time. One is about a tool to help you find your personal sense of purpose as a leader, which I think is crucial, which is grounded in sort of really becoming more aware of your passions, your talents, your values as a person. But that's not the one I want to bring, although I think it's critical. There's another tool which I think is brilliant, which is in Steve's book, which is about how you show up and being more conscious of what mode you're in when you show up, whether you're at your best or more defensive, at just surviving, and being more aware of the triggers that throw you off track and show up with behaviours that aren't going to help you. That's a really important part of leadership. But I'm not going to bring that one. If I have to choose one, it's actually a tool called the Leadership Circle Profile. And that is a really good 360 tool, a tool to help you get 360 feedback. I think one of the dangers of leadership coaching sometimes is if you just work with the leader and the things they think they need to work on, you can be in a bit of a bubble. And it's, you know, a leader's effectiveness is determined so much by the impact they have. And they are not the judge of that impact. They don't know what that impact is most of the time. They're positively intended, no doubt. But giving them an insight into the impact they're having on the people around them is crucial. And bringing that into the coaching work. And this Leadership Circle Profile does that really well. It enables you to compare, as most 360 tools do, their perspective versus the perspective of various types of colleagues, their boss, their peers, their direct reports, and so on. You can also benchmark it against the database. So you actually get some statistical numbers to see how they compare against quite a big norm, which is quite interesting and challenging at times. But probably most important, it's very grounded in some research into how we develop as human beings. And they've identified some sort of competencies for leadership. And they help you identify the links between some of the behaviours that characterise great leadership, but with some of the motivations and the beliefs that underpin them. So in coaching, it means that you can identify some of the things they're doing well, but also possibly some of the behaviours that aren't going so well, and get beneath those to help them really think about what are the assumptions or the mindsets and beliefs that are driving those behaviours, so you can actually do something about them. And I think that's what makes this particular tool so useful for helping leaders flourish and improve their effectiveness.
Okay. So I've found getting feedback from people who other people are working with is useful. Two problems. One, how do you get honest feedback? And two, how do you deal with it when you get feedback that you don't understand or it doesn't make sense, but it's been anonymously provided, so you can't then go back and clarify stuff?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And there's always a challenge in doing this well. I think it's very important to create the sense that you are genuinely interested in finding out truth as a leader. So when they set it up, there has to be a quite authentic request for input into this, which will help. Won't necessarily always crack it, but it'll help. But I think the thing that I've seen in using it, beyond some of the advantages I've already described, is that when people fill this in for you as a leader, they take quite a long time. It takes probably half an hour, quite an investment of their time to bother to do this. And I think it's quite important then as a leader to sort of demonstrate afterwards that you are grateful for that investment and that feedback. And that's best done by, in some way, sort of encapsulating what you've learned from it, the things that you found has boosted you, because often there's a lot of stuff about your strengths, which is wonderful, and sort of acknowledging those is great. But actually having a conversation with people about some of the other things and broaching them, some of the things that you've found out that might not be working so well. You said, you know, you don't understand them. Well, what better way than to start asking people, well, what was kind of meant by this? What was going on here for you or for other people? How can I learn about that? And this leads to a point about leadership coaching. I mentioned the risk of leadership coaching taking place in a bubble. You know, the coach and the client meet, whatever, once every 4 to 6 weeks or something for maybe an hour and a half, a couple of hours. It's like going to the gym, you know, once a month, you know. Fact is, you know, the fact is you're being a leader day in, day out. And, you know, you've got to be practicing these things all the time. And it's so much more effective. There's research around this, actually. If you involve other people in your development, rather than it being behind closed doors, you coach, you open up, share some of the things you're working on, ask people to help you address some of these things. Quite often, some of the things you're grappling with will be because the way people are behaving around you, and that you need to ask them to help you by changing what they do so that you can change what you do. It's a sort of interactive thing. And I think that one of the benefits of doing 360 is if you can open up a conversation of that type with people that hasn't happened before, that in itself can actually be quite transformational. So, and then it cuts through some of the problems that you've rightly identified. I think it helps a lot doing that.
Good stuff. So the final question for what you're taking along with you is, who is going with you?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I tell you what, I thought about when I was back in my business career, I used to travel loads. So this backpack thing was very resonant. And I just remember going to all these lovely places in my old Unilever career and thinking, I just wish I was on holiday with my wife or some of my friends. So I was thinking, well, it'd be nice to bring my wife with me, but I'm not sure my clients would particularly value my wife being present, although it would be very helpful for me. She'd been a huge support to me, both personally and professionally, all the way through. But I guess in the spirit of coaching, there'd be one person who's been particularly important for me. There's a lady called Alison Hardingham, who, when I did my master's in coaching at Henley Business School, she was the professor there who was the sort of linchpin of the programme. So she taught me loads and all my classmates and colleagues at that time about what coaching was all about. And she was so good that I thought, what better to have Alison as my supervisor after that? And I've worked with Alison for years now as a supervisor. And, you know, for those of you who are aware about coaching, know what's involved. It's strongly recommended good professional practice that, you know, you should have supervision. So you've got someone to, partly give you some support, some emotional support, but also challenge you a bit, make sure you're, you know, working ethically and give you advice when you need it, when you're not sure how to deal with stuff. She's been brilliant for that. So Alice will be there on my shoulder. She's always there on my shoulder anyway. I'm always thinking about what Alice would be thinking about this. But if I was having a choice to have someone in the backpack, I think it would be her.
I mean, she doesn't actually go in the backpack, Andy. We should just be clear about this.
Yeah, she's not that small, actually.
She's not having to go into it, but just go along with you. Okay, good. So you've got Alison Harding. You've got Steve Radcliffe's Leadership Plain and Simple as the book, Compassion, and the Leadership Circle Profile all shoved in your backpack. Now, as you know, when you go on holiday, oh no, sorry, you're not going on holiday, you're going on a business trip. When you put that in my head now, Andy, talking about going on holiday. When you go away, sometimes things slip in your backpack. Maybe someone helps you to pack, and sometimes things slip in that you didn't intend to take. What would be the one thing you would want to make sure was not going with you?
Yeah, it's a great question. To me, the answer to that question is the answers. I don't want answers in my backpack. And let me explain what I mean by that. Probably the most crucial learning as a coach is that when you hear someone sharing their problems or an issue they're dealing with, it's just human nature that you'll be drawing on your own experience and thinking, I know the answer to that. I know what they should be doing here. And most of the time in life, when you talk to friends or colleagues about issues you've got, they will be, you know, giving you answers or suggestions or solutions of their own. And it's very tempting to do that as a coach, even though we're trained, banged into us, you shouldn't do it. Because the essence of coaching is that you let someone work out what it is they're dealing with and then try and create the environment for them to think through how they might deal with that themselves. And you use your experience to ask insightful questions, questions that might stretch their thinking. But if you just give them the answer straight away, then they don't explore in any way. And it's quite often something that I have to pull myself back from, because it quite often occurs to me, I really want to suggest this. And I can honestly say, when you hold back and resist that temptation and genuinely ask them, how do you think you might cope with that? How might you deal with that? What are the kind of some of the options you might have for dealing with the situation? Some things pop out that you'd never have dreamt of. Because how could you possibly know what's going on in their world, the kind of people they're dealing with, some of the things that, you know, there might be avenues they've not dealt with yet that you would never have come up with yourself. And I often think, my God, thank God I didn't suggest anything, because what a brilliant idea has just come up from that. And of course, if the person comes up with themselves, they're so much more likely to deal with it. The risk if you start suggesting things too quickly, then I've noticed a client will begin to start pushing back and arguing why it's not a good idea and why it wouldn't work. And then you try to advocate it more. And it's just, that's not helpful to anybody, really. So it's a bad dynamic. So I think I would not want the answers in my backpack.
Okay, the answers are not going with you. I've got to slip in a story here. I'm sure I've told it to many people who are listening. I've probably heard this already. But I was asked once by someone what I did for a job. And I was also asked this next to a neighbour of mine who they thought we were maybe doing a similar job. And let's call him Bob. It's not his real name. I'm going to conceal his identity. Bob jumped in and said, I was born with a gift. When someone tells me their problem, I can give them the answer.
Yeah. Wow. We all know someone like Bob.
Wow. So, yeah, we don't want Bob in your backpack either, no, but the answers are not coming with you. Okay, good. Right, well, one final question, Andy, is where do you hope that you are or are not heading on this fictional gig?
Well, my life as a coach, I've been coaching probably sort of 8 to 10 years now. And there's been a bit of a sort of trend. I started very much focused in the corporate world, which is where my previous career background had been. I began to get more involved in startups, which I've absolutely loved and still do some work in the startup world. But in recent times, I've got more and more involved in charities and working with the CEOs of charities. And particularly in the last few years, I think people in that sector have had an enormous range of challenges to deal with. And so for me, I think my future is moving more and more in that direction. And as you know, I'm not sure whether the listeners know, but you and I know each other from working currently on the doctorate program at Oxford Brookes for coaching and mentoring. And my research is in the space of the role that coaching and mentoring can play for charity CEOs. And that's the kind of territory I want to move into in the years to come.
Superb. Okay. Well, Andy, if people want to know more about Andy Bird, or maybe there's someone out there who's a chief exec in a charity that would like to get involved in your research, how can they get hold of you?
So, yeah, on LinkedIn, I'm there. Or my website is andybird.com. Easy to remember. So, yeah, just get in touch. It'd be lovely to hear from anybody that's interested.
Brilliant. And we can put links in the show notes as well.
Great.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of The Coach's Backpack.
Fantastic.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of The Coach's Backpack. If you would like extra goodies such as free tools, offers, further info about our guests, and maybe even the odd peek inside their actual backpack, sign up to our mailing list at thecoachesbackpack.com. And don't forget to follow the podcast too. See you next time.